Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 1, The Manus, Ministrators of the Universe, text number 19, which is a list of some of the Manus. Parochi sho dvitiyas cha tu. Manur agne suto bhavet. Dumat sushena rochismat. Pramukastasya chatmaja. Swarochisha. Swarochisha. Dvitiya. The second. Two. Indeed. Manu. Manu. Agne. Of Agni. Sutaha, the sun, abhavat, became, dumat, sushena, rochismat, pramukha, beginning with them, tasya, of him, swarochisha, cha, also, atmaja, sons. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The son of Agni named Swarochisha became the second Manu. His several sons were headed by Dumat, Sushena, and Rochishma. Purport. Manvantara, Manu Deva, Manu Putra Sureshvaha, Rishayom Sha, Vataras Cha, Hare Shad Vidam Uchite. There are so many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Manu, the Manu Putra, the sons of Manu, the King of the Heavenly Planets, and the seven great sages are all partial incarnations of the Supreme Lord. Manu himself, his sons Priyavrata and Uttamapada, the demigods created by Daksha, and the rishis like Marichi, were all partial incarnations of the Lord during the reign of Svayambhuva Manu. During that time, the incarnation of the Lord as Yajna took charge of ruling the heavenly planets. The next Manu was Swarochisha. The Manus and the sages and the demigods are further described in the following 11 verses. So I don't know how many devotees are interested in the Manus. It's probably in our spare time we probably don't come to this 8th canto and look up what the Manus were doing. Now the question is, what relevance does it actually have for our life, these Manus? For most people, they don't know what the relevance is. But Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to give us a complete picture of everything. In other words, if Krishna is actually God, then every atom, andantarasta, paramanu chayantarasta, Krishna is in every atom. And he's in between the atoms. He's also in our heart. And the universe is not going on accidentally if Krishna is in charge of every atom and he's moving the planets in their orbits. If this is actually a fact, then there are actually things that have to be filled in, such as demigods, half-demigods, apsaras, rakshas, asuras, all these different personalities. Otherwise, we think that we're here on this lonely planet called Earth, whatever we think it is, and that we're alone in the universe. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, we could take it as some kind of Krishna, only Krishna knows what actually it is, describing all these strange things, Manus, people flying around on peacocks with four heads riding around the bull, the universe in a bull. Actually, peacock is Kartikeya, and the swan is Lord Brahma. Now, nowadays, if you saw someone riding around in a swan, you'd probably shoot the swan down. And if it was a four-headed man, you'd capture him and put him in a circus. What to speak of actually believing that such things exist? Because we've been trained up, I could say brainwashed, by our conception since we were born. This very limited conception of reality. And probably the only thing that can shake our conception of reality are two things. Because we hold on to it quite strongly. It's not that because we're a Hare Krishna devotee, sometimes we shave our heads, or sometimes we put on a dhoti or sari, therefore we accept everything it says in the Bhagavatam. What to speak of Bhagavad Gita? Therefore these things are known as doubts. Now, of course, we don't want to admit that we have doubts because it would be, then we wouldn't be a pure devotee. Pure devotees don't have doubts. And because I changed my address, perhaps, and I changed my dress, therefore I must be a pure devotee. I made the ultimate sacrifice. But here is a mirror so that we can actually ascertain where we're actually at in pure devotional service rather than imagining ourselves to be relatively more elevated than someone else, because we know a little bit, or we experience a little bit. Here we should understand what is our actual position in relationship to reality. How much do we actually believe that, and we're in one particular area, time slot called the time of Vaivashvatamanu. How many people actually believe, how many devotees actually sincerely believe that there's a person called Vaivashvatamanu and that if we were qualified, we could actually meet and speak to him? What to speak of a demigod like Indra, that there's a person in the universe, his whole body is covered with eyes. And he rides on an elephant. That's riding an elephant is not so bad, but he can ride around the universe on the elephant. Now, according to our training, this is all mythology. That people can't do these things. And even if we saw someone doing something extraordinary, we just forget about it because it would be too strange. As I mentioned before, even in England in the 1800s, there was a co-founder of this so-called theory called evolution. His name was Wallace. I think it was George Wallace. I forget his first name. Anyhow, Wallace. And he called all the prominent scientists in England at that time, throughout Europe, and he asked them to come and witness something. So they all came to a hotel. And they came to the second floor of the hotel. And one man walked out the window into the air. Not Wallace, some other man. And then he walked back. And all the prominent scientists in Europe declared that they had witnessed it. And when the news came back to America, all the scientists said, impossible. It didn't happen. And all the European scientists said, the American scientists said, it didn't happen, I guess it didn't happen. Similarly, in modern society, Pashanapi na Pashyati, although we can see that our leaders are, for the most part, in many ways, cheaters, and Prabhupada was saying that they never went to the moon in 1968 when he had an interview in a radio station. They're asking Prabhupada about whether it was possible to go to the moon. At that time, there was a big thing about going to the moon. And Prabhupada said no. Unless they have the proper spacesuit, for instance, he gave that example, then how can they go to the moon? Just the spacesuit idea was there. Prabhupada gave other reasons, for instance, in the Bhagavatam. It says the whole universe is full of living entities. So either we accept the scientists or we accept the Bhagavatam. Now most people are inclined to accept the scientists. And even the devotees, sometimes they have their doubts. This Bhagavatam, it seems like an interesting book. There may be something interesting in it. But after all, it's really strange when you really get down to it. It's not the kind of thing you go around telling people. You meet your friends on the street, they haven't seen, they say, well, how you doing? Yeah, I just found something interesting. Want to hear about it? I just heard about this man. He has eyes all over his body, 1,000 eyes, and he rides around an elephant. Probably the reaction is, you're still taking drugs after all those years. I thought you would have quit by now. So generally, we can't talk about those things. Although Prabhupada said, they don't have the proper spacesuit. Now, even now, that statement is relevant. Because if they, according to the, I don't exactly know what the temperature on the moon is, they purported to be or supposed to be. But since there's no atmosphere, it's hundreds of degrees centigrade. And it's supposed to be, there's no atmosphere, so the whole radiation is supposed to be full of radiation. Now, if they actually had a spacesuit that could have went to the moon, why don't they use that spacesuit to enter into the Fukushima radioactive, whatever they called it, the reactor, atomic reactor. But they can't do it. Even the robot that they have, when it goes into the Fukushima reactor, can't work. Now, how did that spacesuit work on the moon, but it can't work on this planet Earth? So it's clearly cheating. It's like 1 + 1 = 2. Most people still have that capacity to accept that. But when someone says 1 + 1 = 3, and everyone's nodding, that's right. It's 3, it's actually 3. And you say it's 2. Oh, what's wrong with you? Where did you go to school? X on your test, your math. You don't know that 1 + 1 = 3. You're wrong. Under special circumstances, when we're dealing with nuclear reactors, it's 3. It's not 2. And if you accept it, you're sane. And if you don't accept that 1 + 1 = 3 when we're dealing with nuclear reactors, then you're insane. And for the rest of it, you know, just ignore reality. Don't look at the picture. They plant a flag on the moon planet. The first astronauts land on the moon planet. They plant the flag, and the flag starts waving. It was so ecstatic being on the moon. It started to wave out of ecstasy. Obviously, there was no wind on the planet, on the moon, because there's no atmosphere. So how did the flag wave? Well, it was just ecstatic, that's all. Maybe the ecstasy of the astronaut transferred itself into the flag. Don't look. And as a matter of fact, nowadays you can't look, because the 10,000 whatever pictures they took of the moon, they all disappeared. Amazing. Somehow or another they got misplaced. 10,000 pictures. Which are all perfectly taken from a camera. The person had the camera on his belly. He couldn't even see what he was taking, but they all came out perfect. Isn't that a miracle? The whole thing was a miracle. Inconceivable. But don't look, don't think. If you think, then you may actually think that things are not the way you've been told they are. And if that's not true, my God, there might be a God, and I may be responsible for what I'm doing. That's horrible. I like this. People who like the side of the story that you can do whatever you want because there's no God. It's a big playground here on this earth. You just play around. And afterwards, if there's a God, then you go to heaven because you accept it. On the other hand, the Bhagavatam, at least we're based upon science. Now, what is that science? At least the science we can understand is two things. All we do is have to understand two things. One is that we're not this body, and therefore anyone who is in the material concept of life is on the level of a cow or an ass. Because these are very harsh things to say. People will become very angry. They'll feel insulted if you tell the learned professor at the university, "My dear learned professor, who are you?" He'll immediately say, "Well, I'm a learned professor. I have this degree, I have that degree, I came from this family." No, no, who are you? That's your body. But your body was different from when you went to college or when you were 5 years old. Who are you? They'll probably throw you out of class for asking, being so impertinent to ask such questions. What to speak if you ask a question, "My dear professor, what is the duty of a person who is about to die?" Then they'll definitely call the police, have you arrested for threatening them. Terrorist. So modern education, they're handing out people degrees like they're handing out sweetmeats to schools to people. But they're all in ignorance. They don't even know who they are. They don't even know that they're not their body. Therefore, whatever knowledge they're giving, however technologically it may be accurate, but it's just technology. It doesn't really explain who we are, which is the most important thing. If we don't know who we are, then what is the basis, what is the value of everything else we're doing? If you think, if you're a fish and you don't know who you are, and you try to come onto the land, try to become normal by coming onto the land, what is the value of your coming onto the land? You'll simply suffer. No matter how much they give you a degree, you're a PhD fish, you're the most advanced fish in the universe, give you a nice fish house, give you a nice aquarium without any water in it, simply you'll feel uncomfortable. Because you're not meant to live in the atmosphere outside the water. Similarly, however much we may be trying to solve the problems of life, because after all, what is technology? It's trying to make us more comfortable. Have a better seat, ergonomic seat, so that you don't have problems with your spine. Have a car with all kinds of cushions so you can ride around. It's all meant to have your iPhone so you can check the weather every 5 minutes so you don't go out and get a raindrop on your head. It's all meant to make us more comfortable. But if we're a fish and we're in the atmosphere of the outside of the water, no matter how much you make the fish try to feel comfortable, it's going to feel uncomfortable. And it's going to spend its whole life trying to figure out what's wrong. I got so much money in my fishy bank. I got so many things going for me. I've become elevated. I'm the president fish. I got the proper deodorant so I don't smell so fishy anymore. But because it's outside the water, it's not going to feel comfortable. So without understanding the self as a spiritual being, eternal self, then everything else we're doing is shravam evahi kevalam. Now just understand that we're eternal, that's called confidential knowledge, but it's not very much knowledge. It's at least it's some knowledge. It's something. And everything else is just a dream besides that. It may be a good dream in the mode of goodness. It may be a horrible dream in the mode of ignorance. But it's just dreaming, that's all. It's not our dream, it's Krishna's dream, but we've accepted it as reality. Now, higher than that dream is a dream, higher than that knowledge is confidential knowledge, is knowledge that the universe is under control. It's not, as the atheists say, out of control. And that they have to make so many arrangements to put it back into control. It's not going on by accident. The sun is not moving, is not rising at a certain time and setting at a certain time by accident. It's going through its orbit because Krishna put it there. Or Krishna's representatives, who are empowered by Krishna, are moving the sun exactly in an orbit. There's supreme intelligence behind everything. We cut our finger, we don't have to look up on Google or go to the internet to try to figure out how to repair our finger. If you tear your shirt, tear your dress, tear some, then you have to figure out how to sew it back together again. It doesn't sew itself back. Has you ever seen a dress sew itself back together? No. But when we cut our finger, it starts repairing itself. How does it happen? Because we're a nice person? Therefore it repairs itself. Bad people don't, their fingers don't repair themselves. No, it's going on inconceivably by mystic, we call it mystic power, because we have no idea how it's going on. And it's not even our mystic power. We don't even have to have, you know what mystic power is, and still it happens. So how is these things going on? They say it's by evolution. But if you take even the most elementary living entity and you cut it, it'll start repairing itself. So how does it evolve? It just, that's the way things are. In other words, if we look at the universe, we'll see that there's so much control. There's so many amazing things going on. As I said, one of the most amazing things is that we eat a carrot. And somehow or another, that carrot becomes part of us. Becomes part of our brain. Becomes part of, maybe it transforms into our arm. Maybe our eyes. Now, how is that done? Does anyone know? Carrot, you know, transform itself. Does scientists know how to make a carrot into a brain? They know how to make their brains into a carrot, though. No, it's going on inconceivably, but the Vedic literature tells us exactly how it happens in detail. And how it doesn't happen. Because it's going on systematically with supreme intelligence beyond the capacity of any ordinary person to even imagine. So that's the second thing, the super soul. There's a God everywhere and he's controlling this universe. We may not see him, but we can see his control. Just like, for instance, when the sun comes up in the morning, we may not see the sun. But if we see the sunlight, or that we feel the sun energy in the form of heat, then we know the sun's there. So when we see supreme control going on throughout, even on our personal lives, then we can understand there must be a God behind this. Who he is, what he looks like, that we may not know directly by our experience, but by our experience we have to use our intelligence and conclude that there is a person behind this universe controlling things. Now he's controlling everything, so he's a special person. Now at least we can understand that because he's controlling everything, every living entity that we know of on this planet, if they cut their finger, then it starts repairing itself. If they eat something, if they're healthy enough, then it starts transforming that substance, whatever they ate, if it's edible, into different parts of their body. And the unnecessary parts are eliminated. It's an amazing arrangement being made. So that much we know, so we know who's ever controlling everything must be more powerful than we are. We can't even control our own body in that way. What to speak of someone who's controlling everyone's body and every species of life? So with that little bit of intelligence, we establish some faith that there is a God in the universe, and it's not us, and it's not my friend, and it's not even my mother is not that God. And anyone who doesn't understand this, even if they understand that they're not their body, they're also to some degree in ignorance, less in ignorance than a person who's completely in the Bali concept of life, even more less in ignorance than the person who's understands that they're not their body, but doesn't accept a supreme controller. But one who understands a little bit more, at least this is what the eighth canto is dealing with, to accept reality that we're eternal and that this universe is actually this people in it controlling it. People like we are, they may not be perfect, but there are souls like we are empowered to do certain businesses. And it's all in every detail being controlled by them. Everyone is given special powers to do things. Just like in this society, some people have more special powers than others. Because nowadays everything's relatively equal because it's democracy. Or everyone is relatively in the same level of ignorance as everyone else. But some people are more powerful than others. Some people are more intelligent than others. Some people are more famous or wealthy than others, and therefore they're proportionally controlling different aspects of society. But in the universe, there are also persons. Now, we may not see them, we may not even know them, we may not even understand what they're doing, but we should at least not reject the idea that there are Manus, there are demigods. There's no sense of rejecting it, because it actually fits in. If you have a slide here, everything's out of control, and everything is controlled in all the details. With a little use of our intelligence, we can see it's more on the side of control than out of control. And whether we accept these Manus, Swarochisa Manu, or Tamasa Manu, it doesn't really matter. Just the fact that we accept that there's something in that God is controlling this universe, and that there is a plan behind it, and there's people who are empowered to different degrees. Just accept it, and then see what our position is, and try to learn from what the examples are given here. For instance, we may become very powerful like a Manu, or even become a Brahma, but if we commit a mistake, we get into difficulty. What is that mistake? The mistake is if we act outside of Krishna consciousness, then we get problems. What is the problem? We get into the Bali concept of life, and our intelligence proportionally goes down, because we don't understand that real intelligence is to get out of the Bali concept of life. Now, luckily, we're on this earth planet. Right now, we're practically powerless, as you can see. Millions of people can march that they don't like what's going on, and no one cares. Oh, people care, those million people care. But the people who are controlling things, they couldn't care less. Well, maybe they care a little bit, but they don't let us know that they care. So we're relatively disempowered in Kali Yuga, in these little tiny bodies. Still, we may think we're very powerful. Still, we may think we're controlling so many things. Or as Prabhupada told, Prabhupada was taking lunch. Oh, he was talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Los Angeles in 1968. And Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj at that time was the temple commander in Los Angeles, which is a big position at that time. Nowadays, as Chandramali Maharaj said yesterday, no one, even if you become a temple president, no one takes you seriously. But that time, if you were a temple commander, you were practically almost a general. So Prabhupada was talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and said that there's a planet in the spiritual world, it's in the shape of a lotus flower, and it's unlimited. It's so big that if you took all the Vaikuntha planets and you put them together, they'd all fit into that lotus flower. And that there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual world. And each Vaikuntha planet is bigger than all the material universes put together. And there are unlimited material universes just like mustard seeds in a bag. And in one of those universes, material universes, the smallest of them, Lord Brahma is born from a lotus flower. And in the stem of the lotus flower, he creates unlimited planets, material planets. And in one of those planets, which is just like a little speck of dust floating in the air, is called this Earth planet. And on this Earth planet, there are so many continents, there are so many oceans, and one of those continents is called North America. In North America, there's one country called America, the United States. And in the United States, there's one state called California. And in California, there's so many cities. One of them is called Los Angeles. And in Los Angeles, there are so many streets and buildings, and there's one street called La Seneca Avenue. And on La Seneca Avenue, there's so many houses, and in one house, there's one little house called the Hare Krishna Temple. And in that Hare Krishna Temple, there's one Jiva soul, and he's the temple commander, and he thinks he's controlling everything. So that's our position. We take ourselves much more seriously than reality should actually permit ourselves to do so. But the fact is that even though everything is so unlimited and Krishna is behind everything, still we have a personal relationship with Krishna. And if we accept our eternality, we accept Krishna's control, and we accept we have a personal relation with Krishna, then everything becomes meaningful. Everything becomes divine. And if we give up this knowledge, and we don't take it seriously, then something's going to be missing in our transcendental brain, in our spiritual consciousness. Yes, Krishna is so big, but he couldn't possibly control this universe. Yes, Krishna is so big, Krishna exists somewhere, but you know, he has no representatives anywhere. It's just kind of like half what the scientists say must be true. And maybe something that this Bhagavatam says is true. But, you know, my reality is kind of like a mixture of both. I float in between the Hare Krishna movement, the Hare Krishna philosophy, and my normal philosophy, my normal conception of life. I just kind of like float in and out. In the temple, I put on my little halo, as I said. And outside, two little horns come up. And I hide my tail. Don't look. Now, that's why we study Bhagavatam. That's even why we're studying this eighth canto, is so that we can get some conception that Krishna is everywhere all the time. And although we may come to the conclusion he's always watching us, but he's not watching us to see if we make a mistake. Oh, he made a mistake. All right, pick him up. Throw him into hell. Sorry, God, please. He's not like this mean person, as we'll find out in the 10th canto, just waiting for us to make a mistake so he can throw us into the darkest regions of existence. But he's the ultimately kind person, and he wants to give us his knowledge so we don't make these mistakes where we're forced by material nature to degrade ourselves, not even for a moment. It's not that, you know, some people are in hell, Yamaraj is torturing them, I'm in Slovenia, I'm in a land of trees where everything's fresh and pure. No, as soon as we forget Krishna, as soon as we do the wrong thing, then we're in our own little hell. Hell may be a place in the universe where Yamaraj reigns, and hell could be in our little brain when we put ourselves into hankering and lamentation. So Krishna is trying to avoid that. He's trying to give us a complete picture so that we take everything seriously. That we become grave and actually see that if we go on the right side, on the sunny side of Krishna consciousness, then our life will become auspicious. And if we start accepting ideas which are incomplete, which are based upon illusion and ignorance, then we enter into a darker side of existence where we don't become happy and prosperous and peaceful. Or by trying to enter into the light side, then gradually everything will become actually lighter. It's not that there's a light and a dark side. We're just trying to make our lives lighter than they are now, and ultimately there is a light side. And there's a dark side. And how dark it gets, we don't want to find out. But in Kali Yuga, we can see it's the light is going out. Therefore, the conclusion is that this eighth canto, although it may be boring for most of us, you know, Manus, all these names, you know, I know my neighbor across, you know, next door better than I know Manu. At least I can talk to him. You know, this is just a list of names and, you know, ideas and things like that. But somehow or another, if we can make it relevant to our life, although it may not be directly relevant to our lives, our conception may not be directly relevant, but we should take it seriously and see how it actually pertains to our life, what it actually means. And then the Bhagavatam will actually be appreciated more rather than just, you know, I can't wait till we get through this eighth canto. We can get into the ninth, and there's some really romantic stories in there. And then we can really, and then we can get through the list of the kings. And finally, Krishna and the gopis. Finally, something important. Anyhow, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? I would do to Roy.
Hare Krishna. Avaduta Raya Prabhu has a question. First, Manu Samhita instructs that the king's orders to execute a murderer is a favor, so that the sinful activities reactions will not continue. The murderer will not suffer for his sinful activities in the next life. Similarly, a scorpion or a snake, if it is killed, that means to save it from further sinful activities. Question. A snake does sinful activity. Animals act out of karma, instinct. They have no free will.
Well, I don't think, it never said in the Mahatma Samhita, you kill a snake, so it stops from its sinful activities. You kill a snake because it won't bite you. That's all, a scorpion. Because the idea is that scorpions are snakes, they'll bite people without any reason, so they're dangerous. So just protect people from their bites, therefore you kill them. That's all.
And there is another question. Yesterday, Chandramauli Swami quoted Srila Prabhupada saying, Maya is our friend. But Srila Prabhupada also said we have to be afraid of Maya. The two statements seems contradictory.
Well, it depends what kind of friends you have. Well, Maya is our friend. Maya means mercy. Because she kicks us. Once we turn our face away from Krishna, Krishna Bhaira Mukha, Bhogavan Chitare, Nikatastha Maya, Tare Japitiya Dare. As soon as we turn our face from Krishna, then Maya slaps us. So that way she's our friend. Try to discourage us from turning our face away from Krishna. But we should be afraid, unless you like being slapped. We should become afraid of being slapped. That's her mercy. So we become afraid of being slapped, so we take shelter of Krishna. That way she's our friend. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of a father giving his son to a person who's going to discipline him because he's naughty. So he's disciplining him. That way he's his friend. Because he's trying to correct him, so he becomes a proper son. But he's also, you should be afraid of getting discipline.
should act nicely, so you don't have to be disciplined. Anything else?
Here I have also this two questions. Only these two questions I have here. What is the best proof that Krishna is the controller of the whole universe?
Well, the only way we're going to accept that is we understand that we control our own minds. We can control our own minds. And controlling our, what does it mean to control our mind, since we're not directly the controller? The only way we understand it is by hearing with attention. And then we can hear how Krishna is controlling the universe in different ways and see whether personally it's within our experience. Because proof will not be accepted until it's accepted by us, by our experience. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Savasya Chaham Ridhi Sanavishto Matak Smritir Jnanam Aponam Cha, that I am in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So we can meditate on that. And if we meditate on that, then we may realize that Krishna is the one who's giving me remembrance. Otherwise, if there wasn't someone giving me remembrance, why do I sometimes forget? And why is sometimes I try to forget something, I can't do it? Why is it that sometimes I understand things easily, and sometimes I can't understand things at all? So these are things for meditation. For thinking about. And if we meditate and we come to the conclusion, actually there's a person in my heart who's controlling me, giving me remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, then at least I can understand he's controlling the part of the universe that I'm most familiar with, myself. Then if we look around, we may see he's doing the same thing for everyone. Better proof than that, I don't think there is better proof than that. Yes.
This is a very... it could be a very interesting topic, the manus. And my question is, why do we have so few stories from some of the manus? We have plenty of stories from the sixth manu. And we have one big story from the second manu, but hardly any from number three, number five, some of the other manus.
Do you have any? I have no idea. I didn't write the Bhagavad Gita. I didn't even speak it. I guess, you know, time was getting late. He only had 7 days. And the 10th and 11th canto, at least the 10th canto, is quite long. So I guess he was very... First of all, these stories are just illustrations. They're not just stories to keep Pariksha Maharaj awake, but they're illustrations of different principles. So only those stories that illustrate the specific principles that Shukadeva Goswami was interested in would be relevant to both Pariksha Maharaj and ourselves were included. For instance, the next story will be about Gajendra. So Gajendra is an example of a devotee of Krishna who is suffering, takes shelter of Krishna. So that's very relevant for us. Because in Kali Yuga, most people take shelter of Krishna in the beginning because they're suffering, etc. So principles are given, not just equal opportunity for each manu. Some manu writes to Shukadeva Goswami, I feel insulted, you know, I had many important pastimes and left them out of the Bhagavatam. Anything else? Yes.
You suggested that the best proof that Krishna controls everything is that he controls our subtle body and our experiencing it. And if he controls, I mean, that we accept theoretically. And but then again, this... people experiencing Krishna controlling their subtle body in such a way sometimes that they leave the movement also. I mean, the at least the experiences as controlling it unfavorably. And one devotee who had big problems with subtle body, also performing sadhana with it seems to me sincere effort. But after some time, he said that holy name makes him more crazy, more that he can, and I don't know, and he left somehow. I mean,
yeah. So Krishna is controlling remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness.
Yeah, but why like this?
Because people have their free will. If people want to remember Krishna, then Krishna gives them remembrance. If people want to forget Krishna, Krishna helps them forget him.
But why not taking away some of disturbances in a subtle body?
That's because people have their free will. They want to enjoy their senses somehow or another. Then Krishna gives them the opportunity to do that by giving them the proper remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness to enjoy their senses. And if people want to make progress in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna gives them the appropriate knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness in order to do that too. And it can change from one moment to the next. One moment we're sincere, praying to Krishna, help me. And then Krishna helps us, and we think, thanks a lot, Krishna, I'll see you later. Maybe next year, Masmi, I'll come.
Then he gives back reactions which were meant for improving that person. When he decides like this, then he gets back his bad, subtle karma. That's the question. Well,
we're walking around in our karma. It's not that he gives it back. We're already in it. We already have our subtle mind program. But by hearing, by using our time and hearing from Krishna and his representatives, and as much as we hear and remember, try to remember through the process of repetition, and then understand what we've heard, then put it into practice, then apply it, especially in the relationships we have with devotees and with Krishna, then the result is that it becomes, Krishna reveals himself and it becomes realized knowledge. But if in that step process, we eliminate one of the steps, then we don't really get the full benefit of it. And therefore, we become attracted to Maya again. Unless we get the ecstasy of a direct association with Krishna and feel his presence and the pleasure that comes from it, we may be attracted by Maya. Maya is always in the background. You don't enjoy it with Krishna, you can enjoy it with me. And then we start thinking about Maya, hearing about Maya. We start remembering Maya. We start trying to understand how to enjoy Maya. And then we try to put into practice. And then we get the results of that. So, any moment we can change. And those who are sincere, they suffer, and then after a while they start thinking, well, I'm sick of this, let me go back to Krishna again. And then sometimes people in Krishna consciousness, briefly, they may think, well, I'm tired of trying to become Krishna conscious, it didn't work, let me go back to Maya. Because we don't take it through the whole steps. We lose our determination, because we become attached to Maya again. Bad association, especially. All right. Khwala. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.